Welcome to the Future of Love teleseries presented by the Integral Spiritual Experience, Integral Life, and I Evolve Global Practice Community. The Future of Love dialogues continue this week with Sophia Diaz talking with Dr. Mark Gaffney. Sophia is a Hatha Yoga master and an inspired woman practitioner in the domain of feminine spiritual practice, which she has been teaching for 28 years. She has published writings in yoga and sacred movement in both academic and popular journals, and travels frequently teaching women's intensives throughout the world. Mark is a gifted world spirituality teacher and the best-selling author of 7 books. In their dialogue, Sophia and Mark will explore what is the role of devotion in spiritual awakening, what does a Western postmodern devotion look like, and is it necessary, and how can women practice devotion in our time, free of inequality and the subjugation of the past. It is with much pleasure we present Sophia Diaz with Dr. Mark Gaffney.
Hello. Sophia. Hey, it's good to hear your voice, Sophia. We have to, you know, just to share with everyone.
You have an added universe of devotion in your world.
Sophia. Well, before we get to that, I just have to say to everyone that the only way when we're having busy schedules of teaching for Sophia and I to actually find time to talk to each other is to do a public dialogue with 10,000 people registered. Right? So here we are. Sophia, it's delightful to hear your voice, holy sister.
Oh, yes, and yours.
I've
thought of you. I actually have sent many dreams your way.
I figured it must have been you. Awesome. Yeah, no, devotion is oh, my God. I spend the morning changing diapers. That is devotion. I mean, there it is.
That is great mystery also.
It is devotion and the great mystery.
Until you change a diaper, you don't really know what it is to change a diaper.
Oh, my God. And you know, I have to say that there's moments when we're completely and deeply connected with the great mystery as we change the diaper, and there are other moments that we're not, but more about that later. Welcome everyone.
There's always room for more devotion.
There is always room for more devotion, and welcome everybody to the Future of Love. We are here in our last couple of weeks in this, you know, incredible, awesome journey that we've been on for the last almost 30 weeks with myself and our good mutual friend, Diane Mushel Hamilton, with our good friend, Kelly Sozin-Vera, as the executive producer, together with David Reardon and Ken Wilber. And we've had just an incredible journey talking to and dialoguing with in sacred conversation with some of our, you know, deep good friends, co-teachers, you know, great teacher masters, you know, from around the world, exploring the nooks and crannies, the facets, the nuances, the subtleties, the inner places, the unspoken places, the unfinished dream places of love, of the future of love as it unfolds, as it emerges from the past. And in each dialogue, we try and find a particular face of love where we can kind of feel into it, touch it both in our first person, right, in conversation, talk about it at the same time, and then have all the faces merge into one. And I've been looking forward to this particular dialogue for a long time because I am just a huge, both, you know, deep, deep brother, sister, right, and a huge fan, right, and admirer of Sophia Diaz's incredible work in the world, which she does with grace, with the incarnation of the goddesses living in her, as her, and through her. And anyone who's been to one of Sophia's classes knows of what I speak. And so I'm here today to dialogue with Sophia about the face of devotion, the face of devotion in love. And Sophia, just to begin, you know, and welcoming everyone on the call, and I know I'm already seeing there's lots and lots and lots of people on the call today who clearly want to be devoted. So,
who are devoted? They're on
who
the call.
Are right? Who are devoted? Because here they are. So let's just begin with just saying, you know, what is that word devotion? Right? Mm. It's a word. Even the word itself, we almost don't hear a lot in the, you know, postmodern Western discourse. Devotion, as you think of, you know, it's an old word. You know, the devoted grandmother. Right, the devoted, you know, you don't hear the word devotion, right, as a virtue. And let's just begin just to talk about what is this great virtue of devotion? What is it?
Well, first, a play on the word is Dev, of course, is the divine, is the divine reality. And then the play that I like to add is you add ocean to that, is to live immersed in the ocean of the divine. And it's actually where we all are, but whether we notice or not has a lot to do with the openness of the front of our bodies and real nakedness of expression about what we most care about. And I'm so moved, and the timing is so perfect, because for the first time in a decade, maybe, I'm in Joshua Tree, and a beloved teacher and fellow devoted dancer of the 6,000-year-old tradition that I'm dedicated to did a performance to live musicians last night.
And, wow.
Yes, and every single one of us who have, like, preserved this tradition into this time, you know, there was so much in-between time, like you were talking about changing diapers, is I was looking at them, and I said, if you added up the years that we waited patiently to be taught what we most wanted, you know, the waiting spaces are more than the actual instruction spaces. And so that is, you know, I think devotion. Devotion is, you know, the application of faith. It means that you will wait and sit and keep your eye on the beloved or what is beloved to you, even in the not so satisfying moments. And then eventually it gets to be seen and heard, like I got to see and hear it last night. I really felt like I was in another world because of, you know, the voice person. You know, it takes most of a lifetime to be able to make a sound like they make. were so phenomenally beautiful, but I really got to feel, like, all the time how many trips to India, how much waiting, how much the expectation of the beautiful to happen through us, but I got to witness it last night.
And we are in the wake of your ecstatic delight at that devotion. And to share with everyone on the call, you know, the way that Sophia and I connected in the world as teachers who really have both spent our lives, the last 30, 40 years, in devotional paths, which is not often, which is not usual in a lot of the Eastern world, where there's a kind of, you know, profound emphasis on kind of the impersonal, a kind of Zen emphasis, which are all beautiful and holy and fantastic, but the devotional paths haven't been in the center. And I was raised, you know, on the knees, you know, literally from when I was five, in a Kabbalistic path, you know, which merged and morphed into a world spirituality. And Sophia, you know, has been in this very, very deep path of both, you know, the temple dancing inner tradition, which she received, and many empowerments and different forms of feminine spirituality. And then, of course, you know, the embodiment of yoga, you know, not in the L.A. babe yoga Western sense, right, but yoga in the great yoga traditions. And
including,
you know,
the L.A. babes, yeah.
And we can't leave the L.A. babes out, right? Right? Right,
yeah.
Absolutely. But actually, you know, if I say that, I get sued. You know,
I got you.
Right? But, so when Sophia and I first met, we actually met, you know, around an idea which we called, you know, that back then unique self, which is really about seeing and being devoted to the infinite uniqueness, right, both of self, right, of each expression in the world, right, and of other, you know, which is a devotion tradition. And to, you know, devotees, to be a devotee, right, is just such a high expression in the world. And so I want to just ask Sophia, before we get into, and there's so much we're going to be talking about today, but just in your own life, and just, you know, when did you first, right, you know, awaken to devotion? Because devotion is so in your blood. It's so in your, you know, in your, even when we're sitting after, you know, an event that we've taught together, you know, you're kind of attending to everyone in this incredibly beautiful way of service and devotion. So who were your first teachers of devotion, if we can start there, you know, in whatever part of your life? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, but, you know, I am, since I opened my eyes, or maybe even conceived of opening my eyes through the parents that I have, is I was born in a village in Mexico, mm-hmm. and really it's like devotion is to breathe, really, really, seriously. There just is not a dividedness. There's not a thought form in between love of service and of the divine. It was just undivided. I was born into that. And but as a practice, because I then, you know, later was raised in the United States, as an actual practice, it was the South Indian temple arts that really, it's one thing to have as your nature being devoted, as my parents, my entire lineage is, but it's a whole nother to actually apply that as a way of transcending your egoic habits. Mm-hmm. And I definitely learned that from being in India, first of all, because the amount of physical suffering that you see, or, you know, everything's gotten more cleaned up. We're all one culture now, so India's a lot more cleaned up in certain ways now than it was when I first went there. But the display of physical suffering in India, and at the same time, the ruthless love in everybody's eyes at the same level, like, you know, businessmen who aren't suffering and beggars who are, is the just the ruthless love face factor that was so obvious in the midst of that. And then that there's a really, really sophisticated, sublime culture to that. And is, you know, devotion first is, you know, the forgetting of yourself because you're so in love. So that's one of the secrets out of suffering, is like, mm-hmm. put your attention on what isn't you, and with great love. And you find yourself free, even if you're not pain-free. But then mm-hmm. what I, you know, upon our meeting, is that then the next level of it is accepting yourself as you are.
Right.
Exactly as you are. And I didn't, you know, it took me a really long time, maybe half of a century, to, like,
right.
add the second piece. I was so... excuse the language, but I don't know of another word, hell-bent. You know, I was just hell-bent on this transcendence thing through love, but the missing piece was also acceptance of exactly how that love has been manifested through me.
And uniquely.
Uniquely. And that also was the key when I look back, that, you know, the gypsies' feet were so relaxed and they didn't know where their next meal was going to come from. And, you know, basically don't know if they're going to live another breath, and yet the manifestation of beauty through their bodies was so obvious. And I got the opportunity to come back and, you know, teach literally on Wall Street. And so mm-hmm. in Manhattan, right after this, and there was just so much terror about being a body in those bodies, even though the gazillionaires, you know, they're
right.
like completely free at a certain level. And, you know, that deeply struck me, but personally, it took me a really long time to actually include acceptance of who I am as a part of devotion.
Mm.
You know, the unique self.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's the heaviest lifting that any of us can do is to actually include the acceptance of exactly the limitation that the divine shines through in us, but for real, with an open heart.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely received, Sophia, and I think that in some deep way, you know, in the genuine world, the Kabbalah says, in the genuine world of approaching nirvana, you know, teachers will begin to love each other and exchange gifts. So, Sophia, you and I have been able to exchange gifts. I was delighted to gift you with unique self, and you've gifted me. You know, at key moments in my life, I sat and had long dinners with Sophia, and I remember you teaching me, the yoga three breath, probably frustrated because I was your worst student ever, right? The first time I ever did downward facing dog, and again, probably defaced the name of it by actually doing it in my asana, but was with you, and my introduction into that particular beautiful world of body, not just with kind of technical poses, but with the full and gorgeous transmission of the way you teach, you know, opened up something for me in the world of breath and body, which has continued since then, for which I'm forever in your debt with great delight. So I want to, from that place of devotion to a dear and great teacher and sister and friend, I want to pick up on a couple of just the gorgeous pearls in what you said earlier. There were two things you said that I want to ask you about, because each one seems like such a beautiful world. So first, you talked about that devotion requires waiting. I mean, what a big thing, right? Waiting, right? The art of waiting. You know, and it's an art that we're so impatient, right? I mean, everything is fast food. Everything's so fast. We're scheduled, right? And one of the great things, you know, legends of Sophia, which I'm going to share here publicly, she can't get mad at me because we're in the middle of the call, is that your chances of getting an email back from Sophia, right? Well, they're just not high. Let's just put it that way. You know, that this is well attested to by many people in the world. And, you know, the email is this, and, you know, Sophia's kind of refused to bow to it, right? Meaning the email is like, immediately. Or you got to respond immediately. There's no waiting. There's no process, right? So waiting, this art, this great art, not of waiting for Godot, right? Not that kind of waiting which is empty, but this full and rich waiting. So can you tell us in any way you like, whether through yoga, through temple dancing, through your own life, just tell us a little bit. Teach us, master of the art of waiting.
Yeah, it's so funny because you landed upon what the difference is between waiting, meaning that there's something obstructed, and waiting in the openness of receiving more than what you are in any given moment is fullness, is waiting in fullness. And that means that your heart is actually open, that waiting is you completely, you know, with the whole front of your body turned already in love with what you're waiting for, not waiting to love by getting what you want, but being, you know, as incomplete as any moment is, and completely turning the front of your body toward what you love, and waiting, expecting, actually expecting that the magnificence that you intuit is absolutely, positively the case. In any moment of being dissatisfied, that what would satisfy you is absolutely the case, and it's on its way to you. Waiting in fullness, which is a kind of yearning, an opening toward with an already open and, you know, I would say, you know, this word lightly is an open and broken heart. You know, there's a crack. There's like not, it's not a good feeling. It's beyond good and bad. It's just great. It's like the red orange of a sunset. You know, between light and darkness, it's beauty, but it's not complete. So that's the difference. I mean, truly, imagine if everybody waiting to renew their license at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Imagine if everybody sitting in those chairs waited even for that, you know, mundane, you know, just task. But if everybody was waiting with fullness, like the contemplation of divine openness or being met completely, you know, you can, the lights would turn different colors in that room if everybody, even in that mundane task. So that, you know, for a while, especially because I had the opportunity and made the opportunity to practice in between cultures, it's always easy to see all of these like dead spaces that where we waste time if you leave this culture. Otherwise, we get too familiar and we don't notice all of these in between spaces. So there was a long period of time where every time that I waited for anything, I applied this particular practice innocently, ignorantly, in a way, and you know, it landed me in an exaggeration of I would say feeling that then I understand why it's also necessary to taper that down at times, you know, to be softer, easier, to allow the movement of ordinariness to pervade me, not just extraordinariness.
Wow, I'm just... I'm waiting.
Yeah. No, it's a great practice, and at the same time, there's a tremendous amount of nakedness and openness that we all need to temper into our environments, just as also as a gesture of love. Like, you know, you can be completely naked in your household, but if you wear that nakedness into a, you know, a conference room of a business meeting,
it might not go well.
Then that's not skillful means, you know. You have to you have to temper that also as a part of faith, actually recognizing the way the divine has shown up in that ordinary meeting, and you temper your openness to meet that. But as a practice of devotion, it's necessary to practice it, to actually practice this unbound gesture of love, expectation of being met perfectly by the divine or goodness, greatness.
You know, in most of the dialogues that we do, you know, I jump back in and forth with the person talking in this kind of delightful flow. But I actually can't do that now because I'm practicing waiting, right? So you finish, right? And I'm having such a great time doing it, right? So but I mean, it's just, I just want to just share back and reflect back to everyone. And one of the things I say in every single dialogue, Sophia, is, you know, there's, we have fantastic groups of people, and there's a particular group of my students that follows the dialogue. And I say to them that my job in this dialogue is actually not to be a teacher, but to actually hold the space, you know, to let the luminary, you know, the luminary that's you in this moment, the luminous teaching, you know, come through. and just to be a kind of clear mirror. So that's what I'd like to do. I'll occasionally, and that's what we're doing in these dialogues, I'll occasionally say something from, you know, my lineage and tradition and realization that might reflect back. But mostly what I'd like to do is to, just so people can kind of catch, you know, some of the luminosity, right, that's just kind of coming through now. So I just want to reflect back to people just a couple of things that Sophia said, okay? And Sophia, sometimes it's surprising to hear what you said, right? But it's just so beautiful, so I just want to just delight you in that. So first, Sophia talks about, you know, the phrase waiting in fullness. And what a beautiful phrase, right? Just if we just got together in this dialogue, friends, just to hear that phrase, waiting in fullness, right? The fullness of the yearning, right? Knowing that the moment is already full. And the second phrase that Sophia kind of wove together luminously was, you know, that in that moment you're turning towards what you love, right? Expecting, right, the magnificence of it, right, to actually be precisely the case right there turning towards you, right? And the opening towards, right? And you know, that's a fifth phrase. You know, I'm just kind of weaving Sophia, you know, reweaving back just to kind of reflect it back, right? You know, Sophia tells us that you can spend, you know, most of a lifetime, right? Most of a lifetime you can spend, right, in order to make the kind of gorgeous noise, sound that Sophia heard last night from her dear friend. So that life becomes this expectancy, this waiting, this leaning into the fullness, right? And then Sophia adds a practice. She implicitly tells us a practice that she used for many years, which was the practice of exaggeration, right? Which is really a practice to exaggerate, right, the waiting, right? And in that exaggerated sense, right, which then, of course, comes back to center, you actually learn how to do it. And at the same time, Sophia warns us, right, skillful means, my friends, right? Right? You know when to deploy it and when to let that fullness of yourself, right, emerge. And so what we've been talking about for the last, you know, 20 minutes, you know, what an unusual and special conversation in the future of love is the fullness of waiting, the practice, right, of waiting, not waiting for Godot, right, but waiting in which the waiting itself becomes the realization. So just deep, deep bow to you, Sophia. We haven't even begun our conversation yet. We're so deeply in the middle and so just infinitely delighted. And so I want to ask you a second question. And the second question is something that, you know, we all want to understand and know about in some way. Right? How do we practice devotion in our daily lives without losing, right, that sense that Westerners so deeply treasure, right, and, you know, have this insane fear of losing, without losing our autonomy, without losing, and you said in passing, and this is the last reflection back, and I turn back to Sophia, right, you said that actually in deep devotion, you actually find yourself free, right? Sophia said, everyone here, everyone remember that about 20 minutes ago, that in deep devotion, when you're actually giving yourself up, you find yourself free. So Master, teach us about that. What is that? How does that play? What's the inner dance?
Well, you know, speaking very practically to, you know, this part of the world, the culture that we're in, is to notice first just the preciousness of life. So a plant or a fish in a bowl, mm-hmm. I mean, truly, it's, you pick some form of life to bring into your environment and be responsible for as a devotion. And, you know, those things, much more than a chair or, you know, a beautiful garbage can, or you can feel the difference in addressing keeping something alive through your love, through your care. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's something about first noticing the extraordinariness of life, but it's a leap of faith initially to take on a practice. So I'm actually offering a real practice. It's like a plant or a fish. You know, you start small. And you bring yourself to noticing the life of that isn't you. You know, you're not that plant. But anybody that hasn't ever taken care of a plant can't know until you take care of the plant what the zone of communion is, that you start learning about something that isn't you, that's alive and beautiful. There aren't even words to it, but you do it by keeping that thing alive.
Mm.
Or fish. Like, I actually think that's why there's this craze for these, they're Thai fighting fish. They're called betas, because they're so easy to keep alive if you connect enough with them, you know, and they're so beautiful. But it takes, you know, noticing life and then letting yourself care. And it's not care with, you know, an end result, like, you know, paying off your mortgage or, you know, dealing with life. It's actually an end in and of itself, of just the appreciation of life and beauty and a mystery that doesn't really have words to it, that you get to know by keeping something alive, or then being willing to feel that keeping something alive is actually a motive of love, and then allowing yourself to, you know, love relentlessly. But not as an emotion. It's a gesture of your heart to take care of life itself. And you learn something beyond yourself by caring for what isn't you. You know? What isn't you. And, you know, that's distraction. Like, to be distracted out of yourself into love is, you know, it actually is a key point in all of the traditions, the great traditions. But a point that we don't tend to notice as much in this particular time. Because life has definitely been trampled on, you know? It's like,
right.
There's a lot of hurt in noticing life.
Right. I mean, just to feel into that, and just to invite everyone listening. So first, if it's a delight for Sophia and I to be with you and to feel your energy and your presence on the call, and just to invite you to listen into, you know, just the pace of our dialogue, the texture, right? As Sophia kind of, you know, she's not giving you and Sophia, with your permission, I'm going to speak about you in the third person, even though you're present. Sophia is not giving you, these are not canned answers. Oh, this is, you know, this is the 101 Sophia interview. Just feel her, feel as her energy feels into the question and finds her way, right, through the words, right, you know, to kind of finding the words, right, to give incarnation to what she knows in her body. And just feel how that feels, right? Feel how you can actually feel the silence in the speech itself, which makes it so profoundly trustable. So I just want to reflect back again in my self-appointed task, you know, of delight in this dialogue, you know, just reflect back one Sophia phrase, to speak about love not as an emotion, right, but as Sophia called it, a gesture of your heart to take care of life, right? A gesture of your heart. Right, it's this gesture of the heart that lives already in the heart, which is the Shakti, right? Which is the right, and that gesture of your heart actually, Sophia then goes on to say, distracts you out of yourself into love. Right, and that really is the invitation to really invite everyone to have an opportunity to study with Sophia. You can find Sophia in all sorts of places in the world, but you'd have to know where to appear. So in the interim, I'll offer you her website, right, where you can find out where she's teaching, right? And Sophia, is that just if I can trouble you to give me the exact web address so we can share it?
of
Sophia. Where do we find
yoga.
Where you're teaching?
SophiaYoga.com. www.sophiayoga.com.
SophiaYoga.com. And we can find your, and if we want to come study with you, we can find your schedule there?
Yes.
Okay. So that's for everybody. just you know, SophiaYoga.com. Just to kind of, you know, distract yourself. Sophia's invitation, right, is to distract yourself out of yourself into love. You know, that's what Sophia teaches. The fact that she's a master, right, at so many disciplines and that they're expressed in the body, right, they are the body, but it's distract yourself out of yourself, beyond yourself, into love. So really, to invite everyone, take a look at SophiaYoga.com, and the very word yoga will take on a different meaning as you study with Sophia. So that's just a great invitation to everyone. And as we move forward in our dialogue, I want to now, you know, kind of feel into this autonomy question that we began to raise, right? You're devoted and yet you're free at the same time. You're devoted and yet you're autonomous, right, at the same time, right? And so what is that? You know, when I spend time with you, you know, Sophia, I feel both your great devotion and your great freedom, right? So clearly you live that. So how does one, you know, you've given us a couple of practices to start. You know, you said start small, right? Begin with a plant, right? Begin to open yourself up to other, right? And how do you, as you go on with devotion, how do you not lose yourself along the way? And was that ever an issue in your own life where you thought?
I think is already knowing. I mean, it's a part of faith. You absolutely will. And we all should. You will. I mean, if there's any room for error, we are going to make it. We will lose ourselves. So our worst fear is completely true. And that is, you know, the crux of faith and devotion, is that it just feels better to take that leap into love than to hold back for the sake of saving your face, you know.
So at least make mistakes in the right direction.
Yeah, and just to notice that you really are already free if you even consider loving something madly, deeply. And so you're always sovereign. We all are always sovereign. So the sovereignty that we tend to do is relative to control, you know, mm-hmm. controlling things. Well, there's also a sovereignty in abandoning yourself, you know, into the best possible choice. It's not abandoning yourself to your bad habits. It's abandoning yourself to what you love the most. And whatever that is right now, just like really giving your heart and your full expression bodily to that. So that's the difference. It's like of course we're going to find layer upon layer upon layer of ourself that isn't awake. So we all are going to face our errors in any practice.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is noticing what you're abandoning yourself to for real. Like, is it the diamond? Is it the absolute love intuition of your heart's deepest desire? Or are you abandoning yourself to some weird emotional habit?
Right.
You know? So,
right.
And all along the way, all we have to do is make any gesture well, and we're going to find out more about our closures, our kinks.
Mm.
That as long as you choose to do something with a lot of energy, you're going to find the sticky parts in yourself.
Mm.
And it's just when you get to those sticky parts, like, where is your attention then? Are you abandoning yourself into the sticky part, or are you still abandoning yourself toward the beloved, whatever way it happens to appear in your awareness?
Right, right. I mean,
a plant, a person, a relationship, a task, maybe even a tradition.
Right, 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 right. I mean, that. I mean, just it's so essential. I mean, just I want to just invite everyone into this without, you know, with full abandon. What Sophia's saying is so essential. We're so, and it's where my heart, you know, when I first met Sophia, you know, I remember we were at a lot of us were together, and Diane was there, and must have been 30 other teachers at one of the Integral Spiritual Centers where our beloved friend Ken Wilber, who is a great lover and beloved one, you know, had gathered us to what we called behind his back. We said, this is really Ken's birthday party, right? And we had a fabulous time being there just because we recognized each other. And what I recognized in, with such delight and a deep reverential bow in Sophia is this quality that needs to be spoken in the world that Sophia is living, which is this radical willingness to give up that small self and abandon yourself in full devotion and utter commitment. And Sophia says to a plant, to a person, to a path. All right, you know, beyond the kind of dilettantish, am I being served at this particular moment by the path? Is it meeting my particular need, working out my kink, covering over my habit? Right, the richness and fullness that comes from abandon. And I think that's why Hafiz, right, you know, speaks to people, because Hafiz knows of abandon, you know, and the word that Sophia uses, the beloved, which is so deep in so many traditions, to allow yourself to completely abandon yourself, right, in a way that's safe, right? Trust, my teacher used to say, allow yourself to abandon yourself and to be seduced, but wisdom is to know who to allow to seduce you. And he was talking, of course, not about, I mean, Gorway, he wasn't talking, of course, just to make that clear to everyone, he wasn't talking about sexuality, although it may or may not apply there. That's not the topic of our dialogue. He was talking about finding your teacher, right? And he was talking about finding your teacher. He said the greatness of Joshua was that Joshua let Moses seduce him, but Joshua was great because he knew Moses was the one, right? I mean, awesome. I mean, awesome. So, Sophia, tell us about the body. You've mentioned 4 or 5 times, and you live, you know, we all live in the body, but Sophia lives embodied in a particularly powerful, incarnated way. And 3 or 4 or 5 times, you've talked about, right, the emotion, right, more than the emotion. Emotion, you know, which is the involuntary nervous system, is too small a word to describe what you're talking about. But you've talked about this rich, yearning devotion, and you've talked about it through the body and how the body is important, first having the front of your body open. And here I don't want in any way reflect your words because we need them in their original. How does our work with the body, right, play in this world? And the average person says the body's the body, right? And, you know, my emotions are my emotions and my spirituality is my spirituality. And so we're beginning to know that they're of course connected in the West, but you're talking about something much deeper. What's the teaching of the body that's so essential to devotion, or what's the beginning, a glimmer of the teaching?
Especially relative to this conversation, is how your feet are touching the ground right now. And for everybody, I mean, from the call, we can all experience this, is that, you know, it takes breath all the way to the base of your body to even notice that the base of your body and the soles of your feet are actually one experience, one sensation. And you are here, and you already are a great blessing without doing anything else, and you can feel it if you just feel down through your feet and let your toes touch gravity, that there is something happening through you that's really blessed and really, really deeply beautiful. But how many steps in a day do you take feeling, you know, feeling the way that your feet touch the ground, and how we all are supported from all directions perfectly? And so it's that as a fundamental awareness of what it is to be a body. First, it takes being able to take a deep breath. So anybody who is thinking about what I'm saying instead of feeling it, for certain, I can guarantee you that there's not a descent of breath down into the lower half of the body. And so you remain lodged in concepts instead of the experience of being. And so take a deep breath and to be willing to caress the base of your body with your breath innocently, like you're a sea creature, not this historic human being that has shame and whatever else. It's like, but just innocently, and then to feel where your feet are on the ground, whether you're sitting or standing. And there's just an awareness that is very natural to us, that there is a blessing happening as our very life, regardless of what it might look like in all of the objects of it, but the feeling down through your feet. And then, you know, once again, how many steps can you take connected to the feeling in the base of your body, down through your feet? It's a combination of receiving, being supported perfectly, and noticing the blessing, the temporary blessing. It's very, very temporary. None of us are going to be alive forever in this way, in this body. So it's right now, just even as a practice, is if your knees aren't bent and you're standing, bend them. And take a couple of deep breaths, letting your inhale fall down the front of you like a waterfall, or visualizing that, and letting it run all the way to the base of your body, and letting your exhale go up your spine. And the next time that you exhale, also let go down, not just up your spine, but let the weight of your body sink down. And then on another inhale, allow yourself to love whatever you're experiencing, including thoughts. Like, really madly love whatever is in your experience. And then the next time you exhale, let go into being supported, into gravity, basically. So it almost feels like your skin turns into like what elephants' knees look like. They're kind of saggy down, 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 down. And it's always I bring this up in classes a lot, because no physical practice is yoga without the answer to this question being a big fat yes, is, are you in love? The reality is always a big fat yes, but can you feel that? Can you surrender to it? Can you open to the answer being yes without another instant in your life changing? Just right now, are you in love? So, you know, devotion really, really does demonstrate itself in people's feet, which is why, you know, great beings' feet are so revered, because there is a very pure cosmic transmission that happens when you surrender to being here without any obstructions, which is just love all the time, 24/7.
Yeah, just to receive that, and to feel it, and to hold it, and to reflect it back in the dance of the masters, right? My teacher used to quote one of his teachers, the Slonim Rebbe, the great master of Slonim, whose grave I visited Sophia a couple of years ago when I was in Poland in the Warsaw cemetery, which has, you know, hundreds of thousands of people buried with these huge tombstones completely overrun. It's like a jungle of tombs and spirits that somehow survived the bombing. And I found the grave of my master, and he used to say there's three kinds of faith, right? The word faith that Sophia, everyone has used five or six times, faith. You're faithful to the moment, to what really is in the infinity and resplendence of that moment. He said there's the faith of the mind. He says there's the faith of the heart. And he says, but the highest faith is emunat ha'evarim. It's the faith that's in your very toenails.
Oh.
Like, oh, my God, right? Right? Yeah, like the faith.
That's really beautiful. I've never heard that.
Yeah, like the faith in the toenails. So Sophia is a great teacher of the faith of the mind and a greater teacher of the faith of the heart, but an even greater teacher of the faith in the toenails, right, which is the practice that she best brought us into, the practice of the feet, the practice of the feet. Yeah, what a delight. So let me just kind of gently, you know, and we could just stay here all day, but let me, you know, again, in, you know, we all have our self-appointed roles at different moments in life, so in this call, I'm in the delighted role, with such infinite delight, of the questioner, being on the quest. The questioner is the quest I'm on, just being the seeker. So let me ask you another question. You know, in the voice of the seeker, the voice that lives in me as the seeker, right, how do I listen to my body? When my body, and what are the ways that my body talks to me when I need to be discerning, right? And let me try and kind of deepen the question a little bit. And I know that it's a question that's living in the room in this phone call. Right? On the one hand, you know, we know that when I'm afraid, my body freezes up, simply. Right? When I'm, you know, when I'm afraid, I begin to sweat and palpitation. So we know that the body lives and fears translated into the body. And we know that when I'm in love, something softens, right, in my body. So we have a sense of that. But if I want to be able to train myself to listen more deeply to my body, how do I distinguish between the legitimate fear, which is warning me, which is telling me be careful, you know, which is making me conscious and aware, right? And the fear which is really not here right now, but it's old trauma that lives in my body. It's old, it's ancient, you know, it's that word that they developed, you know, it's triggered. You know, it's triggered by something that happened in the moment. How do I distinguish, right, between those two? Is there a particular way, and I know it's a big question, is there a way that I can learn, you know, to discern, and of course you can't teach us in a moment, but a direction to discern between the authentic wisdom of the body that tells me careful, right, and then all of the old traumas and fears that are built up. Is there a way to begin to feel into discerning between those?
Absolutely, and it's very, very practical. It starts with body work. Literally, with body work, like getting a massage by somebody who is very, very skilled at what they do. And, you know, the most effective form of beginning that discernment is Rolfing. I have never met a person that hasn't actually opened to that discernment by having this very, very deep body work, because those traumas are not happening to you when you're on the table and it's obvious. You know, that's where your mind comes in handy. It's like, no, I am not in that car accident. I'm on this table with this person, you know, and yet you get to experience them pressing on these bodily memory contractions that run your adrenals and run the fear response without you consciously activating that response based on reality. It's actually based on memory. And it's killing us, you know, quite frankly, just all of these. So, you know, a really quick way to the very discernment that you're talking about is, you know, participating with an awakeness, not just an expectation of an experience from body work, but with an awakeness to what we hold in our body. And anything that comes up doing, you know, committing to a great yoga class will do the same thing. But when you're wielding your own musculature, it's a little bit harder to feel these places that are just memory coming up. It's just you doing memory. It's not you being present. It's like I had this very great Sikh master come to a yoga class because all of his students were getting a lot out of it. And that's a great teacher who submits themselves to, you know, something that he didn't know anything about. And it was the once again, the downward facing dog. Like, everybody was sitting in a beautiful posture, and this man's samadhi or his bliss was great, and he was filling the room. So he was a great teacher, I could tell that. But we got into the downward facing dog, and it's like, where did that bliss go? You know, there was no longer any bliss. So at the end of the class,
that's hilarious.
He didn't say anything to me except this. He just a little dip of the chin. He said, I want to thank you because I did not realize that I still had some hatred of my father in my legs. And then he walked out. A very great teacher. So in that moment of the downward facing dog, initially, like, our punkiness comes up and we think something's being done to us. You know, it's like something is happening, whereas no, we're actually kissing our own contraction from memory that's not happening anymore. And we actually have to make conscious the whole body. And so I just talked about the fast route to the discernment is actually body work, because you're passive, you're not active, but also committing yourself to a yoga class of somebody that you trust enough. It doesn't mean that they're like perfect masters, but that you trust them enough in their skill. And then you just stay awake to the experiences that you carry, because all you have to do is go from standing into a forward bend and your entire emotional body changes. And, you know, what's that about and where is it coming from? And it takes a long time. It takes some serious practice with a decent teacher to feel where these experiences are literally coming from in the bone and sinew and musculature of your body. But because of, you know, in body work, you can tell. It's like somebody's thumb is going into your thigh and you relive some memory. And then you have the opportunity to actually let go of that contraction.
So I mean, that's just, there's so much to, there's so many ways to kind of to dance, you know, with what you said. But the, of everything, and each sentence was so just kind of dazzlingly resplendent. But just one, that story, I mean, just like, wow. Well, like, I didn't realize I still had some hatred of my father left in my feet.
In my legs.
Thank you.
It was the down dog, yeah.
A downward facing dog.
Yeah.
And, you know, wow. Yeah. I mean, so the book of Job, you know, that you and I have talked about in different seminars, through my body, I vision God. You know, and really, Sophia, for me, you know, I said in the beginning of the talk an hour ago, we exchanged gifts, you know, and the gift that I received from Sophia was really, you know, a sense of, you know, the body in a different way that I had ever accessed it before. But the body not as the body in, you know, kind of the flatland body, right? The kind of, oh, there's a body, but the luminous body, right? The shimmeringly alive body that's holding everything and that is everything. And so I want to again invite people, you know, just to really experience that for yourself. And one of the gifts that we give in these Future of Love series is, you know, we're not building a brand. We're building love together. You know, and each of us are a particular face of love. And in the great teachers, Sophia's holding this, you know, sophiayoga.com, this resplendent, you know, shimmering glimmer, right, of love's, you know, crooking finger inviting you in. And there's something that you'll get by being with her that's just so utterly unique. So just a great invitation to everyone. And before we go on, I want to take a couple of webcast questions, and then we're going to get into the last part of our dialogue on the difference between masculine and feminine energies, right, in spiritual practice. That's where we're going to be going, everyone. And of course, how could I forget, right, integral spiritual experience. So this just deserves a word. Integral spiritual experience, this is the second year, is really this great gathering of taking place within evolutionary we space, right, of the integral evolutionary tribe from around the world. We set up an arch of a five-year journey, and maybe it'll be 10. You can join it at any time, and we'll be unfolding a whole, you know, evolved face of integral spiritual experience this year with a whole network and set of ways you can kind of remain involved in different groups and different dynamic communities, which will be happening in between the two integral spiritual experiences. This year, the topic is the future of love. There's already 400 people coming. There's just a few spaces left, but you come because you really want to be part of this leading-edge evolutionary we space in which we're actually feeling into, like, what's possible in the deepest possible way, right? And Sophia will be teaching there. She's not responsible for the title, right? But I think it's getting it on in all four quadrants, right, or something like that, right? Which is a vision
I like it, right?
A vision of embodied sexuality. Right, which is going to be a fantastic track, three-day teaching track, and really to invite everyone to be there. It's an incredible cast of sacred holy characters, right? Holy fools, holy drunkards, and holy teachers, and holy participants. And if you want to really experience, right, not just evolutionary we space, but evolutionary we space grounded, suffused with love, right? I mean, this is the place to be. So really to invite everyone, if you haven't yet signed up, and if you're on the call, you know, if you want to give yourself a gift and, you know, really, which is utterly transformative. And, you know, I'm not a person who knows really well how to do the kind of things that you need to do to market events. And we don't really market this event at all. Really, we really just share it with people. And because it's a gift, it just really is a gift. And it's just so alive. So just invite yourself to be there. And what Sophia talked about earlier, just loving yourself. You know, it really is a before and after experience. There's people that you'll meet there that you'll be with your entire life. You know, so be with Sophia, with myself. I'm going to be just completely excited to be there with Diane Musho Hamilton. Ken Wilber will be, you know, there in embodied voice. You know, and if somehow he's feeling much, much better by then, he'll be there in embodied body, but he'll be teaching there with our friend Warren Farrell, with Deepak Chopra, with Gabriel Cousins, with Joan Borisenko, Daniel and Linda Bonder, our new young friend, you know, Decker will be doing, you know, practices in the morning. There'll be incredible practice tracks, and there's just an incredible, incredible group of teachers. And you should look it up at Integral Spiritual Experience Year 2 online. Our fantastic executive producers, Sally Kempton, right, Durgananda will be teaching there. Our executive producers, Kelly Sozenberra and Nicole Fegley, putting it all together. It's going to be a fantastic, fantastic group. There'll be a great pre-day on integral theory with myself and Clint Fuse. And so just be there with us. It's just going to be just completely awesome. So questions from webcast. Let me just take two of them, right, just to kind of honor some of them. And if someone's on the line who wants to, I know people usually go for sending in questions, but for the brave souls who are willing to press star seven, which will unmute you. So if you press star 7, just make sure that there's not tons of noise in the background. So star 7, you can ask a live question. And in the meantime, while you're debating whether you want to do that or not and, you know, be there live, right, we have a few questions on the webcast, actually quite a few, but let me just at least take a couple of them. Norma from Sacramento, California. Question to Sophia. How do spiritual surrender, right, and love go together? Is it possible to have mature and mutually fulfilling sex without each partner committed to spiritual surrender? And there you have it. Sophia.
The very premise of spiritual surrender is, overwhelming love. I mean, just the fact that there's a question about them being separate is right there is the answer. No, it's an overwhelming love, which means really profound acceptance of the limitations that are before you. And I think that's the biggest thing about a lot of sexual confusion, is that it's not about attaining an experience in combination with another. It's about overwhelming whole bodily acceptance of the very limitations of the moment, as well as the ecstatic possibilities in it. And, you know, when you're in a deep embrace with anybody, you know, it takes layers of breath and motion and sensitivity, tremendous sensitivity, to open through that one, not to that one. And I think that's another confusion of people, is that you know, to surrender to the divine as anything, as a door, as a mirror, as a, but especially a mutual human being, is still keeping your eye on the diamond, but through that one. Like, if any of us really allowed ourselves to feel another human being, whether we liked them or not, if we really let ourselves feel, it is it's a miracle. It's heart-rending. It's mind-blowing. There is no being, especially a human being, that isn't utterly the marvel of the divine. So it's a practice to, like, through incredible acceptance, but also being able to have the view of the divine, not using a human being to get to some experience of the divine, which is why people are usually so screwed up about their sex life. You know, I want to use you to get to here, but I don't want to see you or accept you, or, you know, I don't know if you're right for me or not, but we have good sex, so let's do it. You know, it's like, no. It's a practice of acceptance, but first and foremost is knowing the difference between when you are really loving whole bodily and when you're actually closed and expecting to be saved from that place of unlove. And then the rest of it is, you know, quite frankly, there's no way to love another human being without also tasting the fact that we're all going to die. And it's what, you know, mothers actually get to feel, which is a part of postpartum depression, is that you have this being that opens your love, like, into reality more than it's ever been opened. And there is nobody that doesn't feel the other side of that is death. And that's hard. You know, it's hard, but it is the premise of waking up to true loving, is that it just is better to love and accept and to taste and to feel and to work with your limitations of not wanting to love with another person. It's just better to continue that opening, even in the face of the fact that we're all going to die. So surrender is impossible without being deeply in love.
Surrender is impossible without being deeply in love. And Norma, right, what an answer. So thank you very, very, very much. And Sophia, a second question. This comes from Jan, right, in Washington, D.C. And Jan asks, and she wrote several lines here, but let me just give you at least the gist of it. And Jan, just on my behalf, just completely appreciate, you know, your sensitivity and the nuance and the audacity of your question. Jan writes, you know, I hear in listening to you and Mark, Sophia, the honor and love and respect in which you hold each other. And it seems rare, right, to hear spiritual teachers, actually honoring each other in that way, why is it so hard for spiritual teachers to get along? I take no responsibility for the question. This is Jan's, but it's an interesting question, you know. And other than this kind of vision in Kabbalah is that Achrit Hayamim, the end of days, you know, in other words, the best of Nirvana happens when spiritual teachers actually are able to love each other in public, right? That's a kind of major idea in the Kabbalah. So could you speak a little bit, Sophia, and of course the most, you know, whatever way is appropriate to what spiritual teachers need to do as a community, right, in evolving to the next level, right? How does that, is there something we can do there?
Yeah, well, it's so funny because I think that the greatest spiritual teachers don't even call themselves spiritual teachers. So so there's that one, you know.
There's that.
Basically, we're working in modernity. We're working in a time right now where they're, you know, to identify mutuality, you know, around the world in the way that, like, the integral spiritual experience is working toward is a brand new definition of relationship between people, because it's never been defined in this language, in this particular way. And so there is... In all of the cultures that have based them, like literally sophisticated social structures, all four quadrants intact, based on the function of human existence being the realization of the divine instead of just survival, which is China, India, and Japan actually successfully created cultures, that there was a format of discussion of people who actually held in their palms the well-being of the spiritual development of people. And they're, you know, have all kinds of different looks and everything else. But there was always a format for them to come together and do battle, basically, is with Dharma. And so we're, like, developing that right now because... one of the tests of trust is actually completely being challenged and challenging somebody based on the most intimate level of their realization. So there was a dialogue that happened, which wasn't pretty, but it was beautiful.
Right.
Because if you trust your realization enough to be challenged, and if you're wrong, this is the good part, is that if you were wrong, you actually submitted to the realization of somebody who was greater than you, so it could only get better for all people. So there's a dignified way to lose face if you're a teacher. And when you're a teacher, the stakes are higher because you're responsible for a lot of people. So, of course, you're not going to lose face easily, you know, or in the wrong setting or situation. So
right.
I think the error that we have, which comes from fear, is thinking that, you know, spiritual teachers' dialogue is like lovey-dovey. It's like, no, the more you have represented a perspective that can be transformational for human beings, the more of a protector you are. So you piss on your territory, you know, like, and you challenge anybody who challenges you. But the difference between that being a conversation is, I love you enough to talk about this with you or to be with you in our different perspectives, is foundational love, trust in the dialogue between traditions. Externally could and should look feisty. But underneath that is this incredible amount of love. And then when you go into the back room where there aren't any students around, you can completely let your hair down, because anybody who teaches anything knows that it is it's a mind-bending responsibility. And it's a lot. So to be around people who know that lot in life and bear it well, it's nice to hang out, but it's in the back room, you know. In the dialogue, there is, all of us are protectors of whatever we've been teaching, and we have to be. We
right.
just have
no.
to be. We have to be like, I'm right, you know, I'm right. And it doesn't mean that you're wrong, but everybody is like the I'm right pole of their tradition. But the love part is in dialoguing about those perspectives.
I mean, and so that this invitation, right, to genuine Dharma combat, which is profound and real when you go into the Hebrew Wisdom Study Hall, right, you actually see, so you can go at midnight, Sophia, any night of the week. You can go, let's say, at midnight to, like, the Great Mirror. It's called M-I-I-E-R, the Great Mirror Study Hall in the depth, the old neighborhoods of Jerusalem that are kind of off the beaten tourist track. It's called the Mirror Study Hall. And you'll see there at midnight, at any night, 1,000 people, packed hall, right, sitting at what are called shtenders, which are these kind of, you know, these funny wooden things that hold the books. And there's 2 people around each shtender yelling at each other. Right, I mean, that's actually, if you walk in, that's what you see. You actually see them in complete this heated passion. You would think that you are in the middle of this incredible conflagration, and what you're actually in is this conflagration of love, in which there's radical devotion. And as our conversation moves towards its ending, it returns to its beginning in the sacred way that endings and beginnings, you know, merge and kiss. It's the devotion to a higher understanding. That if the teacher is actually dedicated not only to, right, the kind of this world things, the teacher actually has evolved beyond exclusive identification with ego, that what will actually come through, even as they protect, and even as they, as you say, Sophia, they honor the right context and the right place, and they don't kind of do this kind of marin, let's be vulnerable and give up any dedication to their teaching. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people fiercely dedicated, right, to, as you say, their particular, you know, vision and glimmer of the goddess of truth. And at the same time, the higher devotion, right, to the clarification, to the deepening that's possible, actually comes through when you feel that, and so you can actually trust the space, right, in some deep, you know, deep and big way. Right? And we'd like to talk about this more, but I want to really honor some more, you know, quite a few more questions coming through in the webcast. Let's try and take at least 2 more before we finish, okay? So from London, and I'm picking this one, and again, everyone who writes in, we pick the questions that we feel most resonate with most people in the room. So this one's big, and I'm sure many, many people have asked it. Una from London. Blessings to you, Una in London. That means it's now, what, 12:18 there? So it must be, I don't know, 9-10 hours later there. So you're right before dinner, Una. If I don't have a teacher, how can I guide myself into deeper openness with devotion and love to guide me through the layers? Can I do it without a teacher? Sophia.
Well, the short answer is no.
Next question.
You know,
okay, bye.
The short answer is no, because, you know, in the way that we've idealized even the concept of teacher based on how much information we now have of all the traditions, it's a laden and heavy symbolic thing. But all of us have been taught well, or we would not be having this conversation. And so it might be the identification of who has taught you really, really well that you're grateful to right now. Like, you know, I've done this as an exercise in some of the retreats, but I was shocked to realize that my guru was first Mrs. Joint, my kindergarten teacher, who spared me so much suffering because I didn't speak English when I went to kindergarten. And she actually taught everybody in the room to acknowledge my difference as a uniqueness, not as a problem. And so my gratitude for what she taught me, literally, you know, she taught me how to take a nap, she, all of these things, taught me English eventually. So my love, gratitude for being taught. So if you feel that present in your life right now, then you can also feel that there is always people before us, like bigger than us, that we desire to learn from, instead of the almighty teacher principle that we've laden with so much stuff. But there comes a point for all of us, and we're in it right now. We're actually in that point where we can open so far, and then we can't open ourselves. We can't. We literally can't. It's almost like, you know, it's like the gesture of our holding on is taking up both of our hands, so we can't open. And so that's why relationship in general, like all relationships, are so critical to spiritual unfolding. And the archetypally most practiced one relative to opening is a human being that you profoundly revere as an insight into your divine nature, and you let them bump up against you.
Mm.
Or you can't find yourself in all of these ways. Like, notice we cannot see ourselves. We can only be ourselves. So it takes bumping into something else.
But that
something else is already present in our lives. And then there's the part, you know, maybe deeply underneath the question is, do you yearn for such a person to undo you? And it's just a point of honesty that we all have to have for ourselves. Like, nobody needs to know the answer, but you do. You need to know if there is a yearning to meet a being that you trust for an absolutely for certain reason about the divine. And, you know, quite frankly, like when I put it in those terms, I don't think there's a person that doesn't have that yearning. But whether you choose to actually base your living, breathing awareness on it, that's your choice always. But the teacher principle is completely alive in our lives, or we wouldn't be able to have this conversation at all. We wouldn't even care. We've been taught really, really well. And it's a matter of acknowledging those that taught you and letting your heart melt in the love, gratitude for how free you are from somebody's instruction along the way. And that's the beginning of the teacher principle, just being alive in your life. And then it's telling the truth about the yearning that you have. And if you actually do yearn, and if you don't, then you can just relax into the teacher principle, because nobody can wake themselves up. You have to bump into what's more closed than you and what's more open than you in order to understand yourself.
So it is. Amen. I mean, that's just so. And I just, everyone, just, you know, as you listen again to the series, right, just follow with Sophia as she worked the question, right? You know, and she began with kind of one place, a kind of, you know, no. She came back to the no with a lot of yeses along the way. And just that's how you feel, right? Just feel into the sensuality, the depth of the question, and how you act. That's how you hold. That's what it means, right, to hold the question on the inside, and just to feel the, and what Sophia is doing, right, the motive force is devotion. Meaning devotion to the highest clarification that's available in this moment. And so just the few minutes we have left, we have about 6 minutes left, Sophia, and I know it's completely unfair, so I apologize insincerely, albeit it, for asking this question, right? So just give us a glimmer, and we have to do for sure another 10 dialogues with you on the next topic. And I know that you've dedicated and staked, right, you know, to use your language, you've staked a lot of your life on really clarifying this for people, the whole arena of the masculine and feminine. And, you know, myself and our colleague and friend Diane, right, have all kind of, each in our own ways and through our own life histories, sought a lot about this, and we even had the delight of teaching three seminars together on sexuality, spirituality, and shadow. So if you could just give us a hint, this is a hint of deeper teachings or more expanded teachings to come, but just a hint in a couple of minutes of just a glimpse, right, so we can, you know, because there's been a few questions I can feel coming through on the line and representing a much larger. We didn't touch, actually, the difference between the masculine and feminine energies, right, in spiritual practice. So just give us a something, a taste, as,
yeah,
you know, of, please.
Following that question, I'm still feeling our girl out in London. Is the man or woman the masculine error in approaching life, spiritual practice, or anything, is fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
The feminine error is sorrow-based. So when you distract yourself or hold back your greatest gifts or try to control your environment to the tune of destruction, there's two flavors, and man or woman, like we're in the midst of them all the time. And these times is that if you are afraid to live your truth or afraid of the life that's around you, it's a masculine error. And if you are overwhelmed by the emotion that it takes to live each day, it's the feminine error. So instead of speaking in terms of the intact energies of masculine and feminine, we can all feel those two poles of our existence right now. Is wherever we are afraid of the vastness of where we're being taken in our life, we will control our emotions, our environment, we'll try to fix everything externally so that it's just so. And that's either a gesture of freedom and clarity or a gesture of fear. And that's the masculine in all of us. And where we are overwhelmed by feeling too much, and feeling, and, you know, feeling the sadness of the world in our bellies and on our shoulders. And that is actually the distraction of radiating deep sensitivity through our gifts. That's the feminine error in all of us.
So the
question about it, about a teacher, the reason why I'm framing it this way, like the question about a teacher is, what is the question about? Is it fear or is it sorrow? Because we live in a time where so much around us is definitely out of balance that we, through our sadness, become reluctant to be met in our greatest desire. So to be met in our greatest desire will always be the case. It's one of the laws of nature.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't allow ourselves to find our greatest desire, it's usually because of one of two things, either being distracted in sadness or being afraid.
Beautiful. What a delight, Sophia. What an utter delight to be with you, you know, for all of us, you know, listening, just to enter into the waters of devotion, right, with the devotion that you enter into them, and just to feel, you know, in every breath that you take, in the pauses, you know, in the nuances, you know, and although teachers, you know, need and should do Dharma combat, but there's this other delight, which is just to delight in a great teacher. Right, and so just I've just had the devoted privilege this morning of just delighting in a great master teacher, right, of the incarnate arts, you know, faith of the mind, right, faith of the heart, and faith of the fingernails. So just a deep bow to you, Sophia. And again, I want to invite everyone, you know, in our last, 30 seconds to please, before you get through your day, check out where you can actually come and study with Sophia in person at SophiaYoga, right, .com. If you'd like to be studying this fall with our good and dear friend Diane Mushel-Hamilton, she'll be at Kripalu in November, and you can find that on her website, right, and I think it's listed also in the calendar on the iEvolve website. If you'd like to be with myself, I'll be next week with our good friend Sally Kempton, actually teaching a weekend at Esalen on falling in love with the divine. And if you're just wonderful and beautiful and holy crazy enough to say, like, I'm going to get out and really find all these people together, right, with Ken and with Warren, and with Deepak and with the whole holy crew, the holy tribe gathering together, hundreds and hundreds of people from around the world, be with us, at Integral Spiritual Experience over New Year's. A delight of devotion, right? A delight of abandoning my small self for my higher self. And let's close with Sophia's voice and Sophia's words. Sophia, give us a blessing into the week.
Mm-hmm. I am so grateful for the eyes, ears, bodies, and feet that have participated in this call, and I completely trust the depth of devotion in your hearts right now, and my life personally is saved by your devotion. And I thank you. Great, great, great gratitude. And thank you so much, Reb Mark.
Amen. And so it is. A beautiful day of devotion to everyone with delight. A deep bow to Sophia. Shalom, shalom, everyone. Till next
shalom,
week.
Shalom.
Same time.
Shalom.
Same time. 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 Same time.